Hey, what a surprise. How nice to see you. Sure, it's Monday and you made it. Jesus, I don't know. Like, I almost didn't because I was like, I finally got to sleep at 3:30 a.m.
What?
Yeah, I had such a nice, lazy, relaxing Sunday that I actually had like a nap in the afternoon, which is deadly because then at night you don't sleep, right? So I'm lying in bed and now I'm thinking about finances, I'm thinking about work, I'm thinking about meetings I've got to have today, I'm thinking about projects I've got to start this week that I haven't paid attention to yet, things that I still need to get done at home, and it's like all just buzzing at full speed through my head. So I'm like, shit.
Mixed with a bit of anxiety.
Yeah, well, at like 2 in the morning, I just said, all right, I'm just going to, so I've started reading Zelda LaGrange Lachranzi's book about Mandela, and it's her second book, and she's coming in on Wednesday. Well, interviewing her on Wednesday, and I was like, "Ugh!" I got through the whole book.
Wow.
Yeah, but then I was tired. Then I fell asleep.
And then you had to be awake an hour and a half later.
Yeah, about an hour and a half later. So anyway, we made it, and that's not the worst problem in the world. You know, it's not like nuclear war because I didn't sleep properly. I'll make it up today.
It's not like hurricanes or earthquakes.
I'll just go to sleep today at like 5 in the afternoon and hope I don't wake up. How are you?
All good. Yeah, I had a similar, I did a lot of admin and work on Saturday. Found myself at far too many government institutions COJs and motor licensing.
It's like a pattern for you on a Saturday. Your Saturdays are spent doing bureaucratic things.
It's horrible. It really is. I'm trying to get it all out the way so I don't have to look at it again for another 4 years or whatever it is. But no, very successful. Drove to Midrand in the heat and back.
Yo, it was hot, huh? Yassas.
And my fans, my car aircon at the moment, you know, my skodonk.
Yeah.
You put it onto full, all right? So it's making a heck of a noise, right? The fan. But it's going like this.
Oh, so it's a tiny little jet of very piss-poor air.
So it sounds like, wah!
Sounds like an industrial air conditioner, yeah. But there's nothing happening.
It's your one hair that goes. So that was fun in that heat. But then, yesterday I just also had a very lazy day. I'm into my foreign language movies and series now.
Yeah.
And two of them happen to be love stories of older women who nab these younger men.
I think there's a theme in what you're looking at.
It just happened. So, you know, you line up all of your list on Netflix, and I click two next to each other, and they both happen to be that theme.
Well, it's a popular theme because it's a popular situation people find themselves in at the moment. Not popular, but like it's a situation people find themselves in.
Or want to find themselves in.
No, I think that there are just tons and tons of guys and girls who are just not able to find someone they want to spend their life with because they've got unrealistic expectations. And because society has made it uncool for people to just get together and be with each other. They've made it, the balance of pressures is on the married or the in a relationship people. So they make it.
Smug marrieds, we used to call them.
Society's made it look like the singles have a better life. And in some ways, you might think that's true. I just don't know that we should be making excuses for anybody. Like, let's stop romanticizing anything. For a while, all we did was romanticize couples. Now there seems to be a concerted effort. And I don't think this is a very controversial thing to say, but some people will say it is. There's a concerted effort in modern media and in social media, the kinds of content people are consuming. There's a huge amount of like hero worshipping and romanticization of single people. And I don't think that that's the state for most. Most people are not designed to be single. There are very rare exceptions of people who can and people who are genuinely happier on their own. But they are the tiniest minority. And you know how we know? Because they don't produce children. And therefore, they go extinct. So guess what kind of people end up having children and made you and made me and made you? So the ones who get together and fuck.
We're going extinct?
Yeah, well, I think this is the first time probably in record keeping to the degree that we do record keeping now, that single people are able to exist in the numbers that they are. Never been possible before. What's your utility in civilization in 1600 if you're a single person?
No, well,
you're a witch. You get
condemned.
Burned. Yes. You're a witch. Or you're a lunatic, an eccentric, right? There's no space in society for those people. So they were always the tiniest minority of people. So now what you've got is instead of people who are truly choosing to be single, you've got a large percentage of those people. I would say probably upwards of 80% of those people. And again, I'm pulling these statistics out of my ass, so tell me if I'm lying. But I think the vast majority of people who are single don't actually choose to be single. I think the vast majority of people who are single are desperately lonely. They are hideously unattractive. Mm. They are without character, personality, or guile. So they have no ability to attract anybody using, you know, the charms of knowledge, language, humor.
I disagree on that point because you find a lot of those people do find people. They
with those ugly, humorless.
Yes.
I don't know, huh?
There are people who are in couples, in relationships.
I met a lot of single people and I thought, I know why you're single. And I'm on the single side, right?
Yeah.
So I'm totally objective about this. I really am. I meet these single people and I look at them and I go, you're not single because you choose to be. And fight me. I mean, if you think I'm talking shit, bring it on. Because honestly, I do not believe that there are that many people who want to be single. I love it. But I'm the exception. And I'm totally willing to be the exception to the rule. I spent a lot of time this weekend with my two little nephews. I organized a weekend away for my brother and his wife. And so the nephews were with my parents for Saturday and Sunday. I went and spent a bit of time with them there and all that. Lovely, had an awesome time with them. They're turning into humans, you know, like they're becoming
characters.
Yeah, they're becoming personalities of their own. They've got things to say. They're fun to engage with, to talk to about stuff. They have interesting observations, and they can speak with some understanding of the world, which before was impossible. You know, they'd mumble and mutter and say nonsense. But I don't want that for me. I love being their uncle. I don't want to be their dad.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I do. I definitely love those kids more than any other kids on earth. And I can't imagine like anything more wonderful. One of my good friends had a baby. She had a baby, a month ago? And she is in heaven. She's on cloud nine.
Mm.
And I would never have thought she would be a mom. And she makes she makes me question my assumptions about everything. But she's so happy. And I can only imagine how wonderful that is. And I think it is totally true that once you've had a kid, there's just nothing that comes close.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But I don't want it. So yeah. I'm a bit different to everybody else, and that's okay. There are very few people who actually want that deep down inside.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were kind of led down that path because it was the next thing to do, the right thing to do, according to society, family pressures. Mm. Just looking, this reminded me, I'm just looking at photographs here. My brother is in the UK. You know, you usually get a godfather, but that's according to like Christian values. Mm-hmm. Now you don't have a christening if you're not Christian. You have a naming ceremony, and mm-hmm. then somebody is appointed the guiding adult.
Jesus, they've taken the content out of everything, haven't they? They've created these boring, sterile, and this has got nothing to do with your brother or whatever story you're going to tell us now. But the guiding adult.
Yeah, that's
it. Sounds like someone who leads kids through a dark cinema to do terrible things to them. and the naming ceremony. It's like the gender reveal. It's just like, this is so, just call it a christening. What do you care if you're not a Christian? I'm not. I call it a christening. Someone says to me, you're coming to the naming ceremony. I'm going to go, the fuck is wrong with you?
I wouldn't want to call it a christening if it wasn't one. I'd want to call it something else, but maybe not naming ceremony, but I wouldn't want to call it a
the
christening.
Guiding adult. Ladies and gentlemen, the guiding adult will show you to your seat on the plane.
It's like a usher who's going to, because you're too dumb to find your number. You'll can't count beyond three and I'm in seat 7D. Help me, please, guiding adult. That's what it's like. I mean, they're just taking the content out of everything, aren't they?
Yeah, they could have been
sterile.
Better
sterile. This is what happens when politicians are in charge of things. They just make
politicians.
It all. Yeah, politicians. This is politicians.
They're going for the Christianity side of things.
I'm telling you, this is politicians.
So anyway, she decided in her late 30s.
Is this your brother's friend?
Yes. Okay. That she was just going to go to a sperm donor. She wanted a baby.
Yeah.
And it's made her so happy. She's sure. An absolutely happy mom. It's
wonder
changed
how,
her life.
I wonder how happy the kid's going to be.
Yeah.
Without knowing a half of who it is.
Well, I mean, I've grown up with a dead father and an adoptive
but
father.
But you knew
and I'm
about
okay.
him. You knew about him. You knew what he was. You knew he was a musician. You knew stuff about
yeah.
him.
Yeah. But, yeah, not for me. Just not for me, the children thing.
So let's look at these comments, see how wrong or how right we are. Conga Chris says, I'd rather become a dad at 40 than become divorced with kids at 27. Yeah, there are lots of stories like that too. So yeah, I hear you. Charlene says, I've never been married and I'm happy. I think the majority are not happy, but I am very happy. I can't seem to find anyone that can engage intellectually on different topics. They boring.
Oopsie.
You're doing quite well until
they
boring.
They boring.
Ooh, I can see why you're single.
Oh, Gareth, well.
Right? You didn't come here for love, did you? Because then you came to the wrong place. Let's see. Raven says, I will be honest and admit I have never been single for more than a couple of weeks. I hate it. Okay, there's some honesty. I have people in my life who are just, they are relationship people. They want to be in a relationship. And they're really good at being in relationships. They're terrible at being single. So you get both kinds of people. Neither is better. Neither is worse.
Mm.
You just have to, you have to be honest with yourself. And the big problem I have these days, people are not honest with themselves about what they want.
Yeah.
What I mean, and I'm not here to attack single people today because otherwise I'd be attacking myself. I just see a lot of single people who are, they're lying. They're like, I want to be single. I'm a strong, independent whoever. You're like, yeah, but actually you're scared of relationships or you're afraid that you'll end up screwing it up or whatever else.
There we go. So you know? For me, I've never vehemently said that I need to be in a relationship or not. But being single, I would like to be in a relationship, but I don't want everything that comes with it. I'm actually afraid of it. I know that I might fuck it up. I know that I might not be able to give it the attention it deserves. I've seen the mistakes of the past, and it's just too much.
Well, let's not get Dr. Hanan on too early. In any case, I think if he had to unpack you, he'd be busy for weeks.
Yeah.
Or me, for that matter. I used to be married and I have three kids, but over the years, I came to realize that I'm most happy, content, creative, and prosperous without a partner, says Riette. I adore singleness. Yeah, okay. Adrian says, a lot of people are married out of necessity of family pressure and then locked in the family dynamic with kids, are bitterly unhappy, never ever get married or have a baby in your 20s. Well, you say that, but our parents' generation all got married in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God they did, or we wouldn't be here, right? So to each his own, man. Like just do your thing, but don't bullshit us that you love being... Me and my husband, you see these people too on social media, right? They have a joint account.
Mm.
And then she goes, my husband and I had such a wonderful day. She's speaking on his behalf and everything.
Mm.
And you know, like that guy just, he hates her. he hates her. He hates sharing the Facebook account. He hates her posting the pictures of them frolicking with the kids. He hates it. He hates the whole thing. But he'll lie and she'll lie. And they'll tell everybody, oh, we've been so happily married for like 12 years and it's so great. You're like, yeah, sure. And similarly, the single people who go, ah, I'm so happy single. I've never been happier. And then you dig a little deeper. You find out they actually have, they get so bored and lonely. They have nothing. They have no hobbies. They're constantly getting out and going to places and trying to meet people because they want that relationship badly, getting drunk or doing like really self-destructive things just because they don't want to be alone. But then they'll say to you, no, I'm single. I'm so happy single.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, all right, I don't believe you. Because the other thing is that there isn't really a price to pay these days for being dishonest, right? In the old days, and again, I have to refer everything to history because it's my favorite subject. So if you take this back a million years ago, if you were dishonest, you'd be thrown out of the tribe because dishonesty had a price. Like you could end up having someone in the tribe killed. You wouldn't get food. If you lied about your antics and the rest of the tribe found out about you, they would be angry and probably kill you because these are primitive people. So there was always a price for dishonesty, and it was considered a very bad thing to be dishonest. And through the years, we have stories from the Bible about dishonesty and what happens to dishonest people. Mm-hmm. We have stories from ancient Greek and ancient Egyptian and ancient Roman mythology about what happens to the dishonest, and it's always bad. Yeah. Nothing good happens.
It's like almost as bad as stealing or cheating.
You would think.
Pillaging.
And then suddenly come the advent of social media, and people just lie. They like post pictures that aren't even theirs and say how beautiful this place looks where they're not. They Photoshop themselves to the nth degree where they don't even look like that in real life, and there's no cost. Nobody ever has the balls to say to them, you don't look like that. Like I once took this up with a girl I know because she had a picture with me and her in it.
Mm.
And then she'd Photoshop both of us. I looked like a 12-year-old, and the focus was so soft that it looked like it had been taken with a camera that had been smudged into grease or something. And I phoned her up. I said to her, what the hell is that? With a screenshot. I said to her, this is not how I look. And that's not how you look. And who are you trying to bullshit? Like people who know you don't look like that. And what do you think that the people who don't know you're going to do? They're suddenly go, I really want to know her because she looks so great. What the hell's wrong with you? People don't like honesty. They all say, all I want is a bit of authenticity, just some real, real people, real conversation in my life. And then we give them that, they go, no need for you to be so rude.
Yeah. Everyone's acting to some degree, covering things up.
Yeah, I know.
Pretending, I think.
Pretending.
It's probably better than it's Hollywood's
fault. It's Hollywood's fault because they made pretending a reason for people to be famous.
And get rich.
So people think if they can, like someone in a little house in a shitty town somewhere in South Africa reckons, if I just pretend enough, I'll get famous and rich. And look at Charlize. She became like famous. So it worked. Right?
For one in a million. Yeah. One in 10 billion.
We're all the descendants of primitive people. Yes, absolutely we are. I like that comment. How would you be able to work? How would one be able to work overseas and maintain a relationship? Hey, listen, that long distance thing is all about discipline. And that's another thing. Like, I know we're sitting here complaining about people this morning, but hell, isn't that part of the fun? is that people they're just totally undisciplined. That's why relationships don't work.
Mm-hmm.
That's why single people who say that they like being single can't stick to their own knitting because they just don't have discipline.
Discipline and focus.
Yeah,
because you lose focus. Sometimes if you're only able to commit yourself to three things in your life, so it's your work, your family, and your relationship, at some point one of those is not going to get the attention that it needs, and that's where relationships kind of fall flat. It's like, oh,
I think that's right.
You're working too hard. You're putting your family in front of me.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Anybody God got forbid, time for that?
God forbid you should actually enjoy work and like enjoy doing cool things at work, thinking about it all the time. That's not a bad thing, right? Here's a comment from Valerie. She says, I was married for 48 years and widowed 7 years, and I'm quite happy not being attached to anyone. It's a funny thing, hey, like women who lose their husbands, even if they were happily married. She says she was married for 48 years. I hope they were happy. She doesn't mention that specifically, so they might not have been. And widowed for 7 and quite happy not being attached to anyone is what she says. So I don't want to misquote her. But it is interesting to me how many women are perfectly okay after the husband's gone. You know,
the other way around doesn't work so
with
much.
Men. Yeah. No, the wife dies. A man is a disaster. He needs to get remarried very quickly after that.
Yeah.
Or else he just goes downhill and dies.
You see, from what I've seen just in people that I know, is that when that does happen, men haven't realized how much the woman is really doing in their lives.
Mm.
Not only tasks like cooking or doing the washing or, you know, keeping the family together, but just her presence.
Yeah.
He hears annoying, annoying, annoying. I wish she'd shut up, but doesn't realize that through all of that, she's looking after his emotions and his well-being.
And driving him fucking mad.
And driving him mad. But when that goes, yeah, they realize
it's quiet, right?
They realize it too late.
Okay, so Grace says, the problem is the people who should be getting married and having kids are not doing so, while the least stable and prosperous people in societies are multiplying at a rapid rate. Mm. It's not a good thing. Again, like, who's going to make this rule, right? Do you really want a world where governments decide who's going to have kids? That would be terrifying. Can you imagine, I mean, our stupid government who can't seemingly provide water for Gauteng.
Ugh.
We're going to trust them to make the right decision about who should have kids? We can't even trust them with the kids that have already been made being educated properly. They are responsible. They've told us, no, we want a state education system. Okay, then you'll educate our kids, right? Yep. Do we have educated kids?
No.
No, we have dumber kids than at any other stage.
And why? More unemployment.
More unemployment and unemployability, because the kids who are being educated by those people in government aren't useful to the market. No one's going, as long as you have one of those Angie Mochecha matrix, I'll hire you. Don't worry about a thing, said no one in the world. Ever. But, you know, we'll trust them to decide who's going to have kids and who isn't. This is a perpetual problem. We're never going to solve it. Not this morning, I'm happy to say, because we've actually got other things to talk about too. We just went down this massive rabbit hole about all of this stuff. But I don't want anyone else deciding who should and shouldn't have kids. Let people decide, and then they must bear the consequences. If you decide to have kids and you're a terrible fucking person and you have no discipline, no focus, you have no resources, and you're just an imbecile, and you have kids, I feel sorry for those kids, but what are you going to do? I can't go around sterilizing people. It's not my business.
Yeah.
You know? And similarly, if you think you're a wonderful person, you go through all this, you do all the things that you're meant to do. I know some people are trying really hard to be good parents. Kids still end up a fuck up. Not your fault. What are you going to do? Tell those people, going to sterilize you. No, the kid's already born. The mistake's been made. What are you going to do? And in some cases, those kids end up becoming fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to just look at the bad case scenario. Some of these kids, they come from terrible parents. Awful, awful people. Like, people you would not want within 100 kilometers of anyone you love. And yet the kids end up miracle. Mm. End up being fantastic. They solve diseases and cure people and make problems go away. And it's just phenomenal, right? So who knows? It's all very random.
Yeah.
And then you also get those people who produce like one good kid and one shitty one. So you don't know.
And then the good one dies and the shitty one.
Probably something like that. All right. Gareth, no tribute to Tito, says Carl. Now, I actually was going to say something. I didn't do anything on social media because I saw this outpouring of stuff. And Tito Mboweni was absolutely one of the prize people of post-1994 South Africa. He had a sense of humor. He was smart. He actually really cared about what he had to do. He was labor minister under Nelson Mandela for the first administration, became governor of the Reserve Bank under Thabo Mbeki. He served as our eighth governor of the Reserve Bank. I used to call him governor because that was what he was when I met him. And I had a couple of lunches with him, just him and me laughing and talking nonsense about all the other politicians and state of South Africa and what we could do to make it better and all these things. And he very seriously was going to make a move when Jacob Zuma was president to re-enter politics because he felt there was work to be done and he was going to be one of those people who helped. He reached out to everyone, people who you'd think couldn't possibly have been his friends, you know, people from other political parties, people from NGOs, people who were involved in business, and kept up relations with all of them. He was fantastic at that. I mean, he was a proper old school politician, the kind that valued relationships.
Yeah.
And I was blown away. I was just very, very sad to hear that he died over the weekend. He wasn't even that old.
No.
And most people will probably, in the last 5 or 6 years, know more about Tito Mboweni's cooking than anything else. He used to share his recipes and the results of those recipes on Twitter.
Mm.
And it was very funny because people would like pile into him about how bad he was or tell him he did a really good job. And it was fun. He had such a capacity for not taking himself seriously. So I'm very, very sad he's gone. I can't really believe it. He was someone I felt like I had a real connection with.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. I also didn't want to like climb on with everybody else posting pictures with him and all that stuff. You know,
yeah.
What for? Who are you doing this for? Like I will miss him.
Mm.
I really will. I spoke to him I bumped into him at Killarney Mall. I went there for an interview with Sizwe Mpofu-Walsh on my way out, going to the parking lot. He walked in. I said, "Hey, Gov." He's like, "Hey."
Mm.
Gave each other a hug. Said to him, "Let's do lunch." It's the last time I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Kind of wish we'd done the lunch.
Yeah. But then you would have left that lunch saying, "We must do lunch again."
You never know when it's going to be the last time you see someone. So,
yeah.
You know, treasure the things that you have done with them. And I was very, very chuffed. He once invited me to the Newtown branch of the Reserve Bank, where he showed me how they destroy old currency. And they took pallets of 200 Rand notes. I mean, I don't know. You add that up. Because this many 200 Rand notes is like, you know, 100,000 Rand or 500,000 Rand if you squeeze it together tightly enough. But this many in a big block, and they just put them straight into shredders. And it comes out tiny little pieces on the other end. And I said to him, "What do you do with that?"
He said, "So weird.
So we just throw it out with the rest of the trash."
Wow.
Hundreds of millions of rands destroyed on a daily basis because, you know, once notes have been in circulation for a certain amount of time, you have to destroy them and you have to create new notes. And I went to his office at the Reserve Bank in Pretoria once. He showed me all the stuff they've confiscated from people because it's a representation of the money. So one guy had woven a carpet of 100 Rand notes and they said, "No, sorry, you can't have that." Took it away from him, put it in the governor's office. There was a 100 Rand note on the wall, an old 100 Rand note that was, it was like a perfect reproduction. It was done in pen by a prisoner over a period of, I don't know, several months. But this thing, unless you looked really closely, it looked like an actual 100 Rand note.
Mm.
And I said to him, "What's that?" Because I didn't look at it closely. And he told me the story. And as I went closer, I could see the ink and the lines and, you just think about this prisoner sitting there just trying to forge, or just maybe it was an artist. He must have been an artist.
Yeah.
He was a fine artist, if you ask me. And napkins and
so you're not allowed to print, but what about, we see things that are printed with US dollars
so,
as the fabric or the pattern.
So I don't know how it works in America, but in this country, any representation of our money, if you're trying to create a reproduction of our money in any way, shape, or form. It doesn't have to be as an actual banknote. It's illegal. Oh, yeah. It's up for confiscation.
That makes sense. I mean, I can't ever remember have seen a bag, a tote bag, or an apron can't or a it. Hat or
can't do it.
Like that.
They'll take it away. And I remember looking at this guy's signature on every one of our notes and thinking, man, I got his phone number. That's pretty damn cool. And he'd message from time to time and say, what are you doing? Let's go for a coffee or something. And I mean, I'm not saying this happened all the time, but it happened 4 or 5 times. And I thought, that's so cool. Mm. Even after he was no longer governor, he had a farm out in Mahuba's Kloof where he grew avocados. And he told me with great joy and hilarity, it could even have been on one of the shows when I interviewed him, how bad an avo farmer he was.
Oh.
That in the first season, nobody told him how to grow avos and how to protect them from rain and wind and frost and all that stuff. Until eventually one of his white neighbors came over and said, listen, let me show you how you do this. And he's like, well, thanks for telling me. I've already lost 2 harvests. But he was a very down-to-earth, normal dude. And I think we are poorer for every one of the guys from that generation who's gone.
Mm.
You know, these are the guys who actually, they struggled.
Yeah.
And there are very few of them left. And I appreciate always the fact that he took this white dude who was noisy and said things in the media and actually made him a friend.
Mm.
I was like, fuck, that doesn't happen easy.
Yeah.
What a cool guy. I can't say there's anyone in the ANC that I ever was as close to as he was or as I was to him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very sad about Tito Mboweni. How many of them are left? I don't know. I think he was kind of one of a kind. All right, let's look at some other stuff. Okay, when the banks create money out of thin... Oh, this is an interesting story because this is actually something that James was... he put in the running order for us. Apparently, we're going to say goodbye to cash. Well, I don't think so, but listen to the story, okay? South Africa is heavily reliant on cash. Almost half of adults withdrawing all their money as soon as the money is deposited, and they like it in cash. However, there is a rapid adoption of cashless payments through credit and debit cards and systems like PayShop. Now, the Reserve Bank aims to make the country's economy cashless and reduce reliance on physical cash. Reasons for the heavy cash usage include lack of trust in banks, fees associated with card transactions, merchants' lack of acceptance of cards in the informal economy. Commercial banks are encouraging clients to adopt and use digital forms of payment along the way. The value of transactions paid via digital wallets has also increased significantly. So they're saying we're going to get to a cashless economy. I don't see it happening anytime soon. What you got to remember is that it's all good and well if you live in the suburbs and you have a wallet and you have a card and you have a bank account and all this stuff. A great many people in this country do not, and they only trust the cash.
Mm, 100%. I don't know if it'll ever disappear. And there's so many things that it's good for and useful for.
Now, what do you use cash for on a daily basis? Hello, James.
Morning, guys.
Oh, hello.
Oh, look at you just stuck in there.
Hi.
Do you use cash?
Very infrequently, like as little as possible.
I use it every day to pay for parking. Reason being, they've installed a new parking system.
At work?
No, it's at the hospital.
Okay, yes, because you're there all the time.
Yeah, and the card system doesn't work well. It won't scan. Also, I've got a black card, and for some reason, black cards don't scan well on these new machines. Anyway, so I draw cash specifically, and it's much quicker. But the weird thing is, you know, if you're at an ATM, you're getting crisp notes out of the ATM. If you put in a 100-rand note at a parking machine, you're getting everybody else's dirty cash.
Yes.
You know that I can smell it before it comes out?
Ooh.
Damn.
So, you know that dirty, that smell of money?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of cash?
Mm-hmm.
Dirty cash. And it makes me nauseous now. And I swear, when this whole ordeal is over, I'm going to associate the smell of dirty money with this experience.
When do you use cash?
Probably literally just for parking, actually.
And for tips.
Yeah. The rest is on my phone. I mean, I've got my card.
Yeah, I seldom use it, but I like to keep a little bit of cash just in case. Because you never know when it could
never know when you have to bribe someone.
I do often.
Well, it could be a bribe. It could be parking. It could be paying somebody legitimately. Often there are things that you think, oh, let me just use cash for
100%.
This. 100%.
I'll get a call. My gardener needs 80 rand in cash.
Yeah.
Go and drop off the money.
I'll often make the mistake of going for his mall without cash, which if you do, the banks are all the way on the far side of the mall.
Oh, that's horrible.
Where, like, nobody goes. So you have to do your little shopping thing. Then you realize you have no cash for parking.
But I have noticed there are less and less ATMs around.
True.
It's mostly because they're obviously a hot target for, you know, cash and transit thieves. And really, it doesn't make sense for us to have too much cash around, but I don't think I'm ever going to stop using it completely. I always want a little bit of cash somewhere.
Mm.
You know, it's a good thing to do. All right, so that could happen, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. Let us turn our attention to the sport. That's why James is sitting here. It's not for his health. So what happened over the weekend in the sport?
Not an awful lot this weekend. Quite a few South African things, though, in the world of sport. We'll start with the AFCON qualifiers. South Africa played Congo on Friday.
That's right. We spoke about that on Friday, too. How did we do?
The funny story around that one was Congo were landing on Friday morning.
Yeah. They were going straight from the airport. Yeah.
And it showed in their game because Congo lost 5-0.
Okay, well, if Bafana hadn't won there, I would have been very, very worried.
Can you imagine?
Okay, good. So we'll take the win.
So we'll take the win there.
Do from now on is just any team we're playing, just fly them in that very morning. Just don't give them any options.
We play them again. What do we do in this situation? Because we've got to play Congo again on Tuesday. How do we deal with that then?
Mm. Send them home and then bring them back. It's like we've got time. Today's Monday. We're playing them on tomorrow, right? Yeah. So send them home now, this morning at about 10. Then they can get home, brush their teeth, change, pack their kit for Tuesday, and then hop on a plane. And we make them fly at like 4 in the morning on Tuesday.
The red eye one.
Yeah, so they can wake up around 2 a.m. Yeah, that's a good plan. Sounds good.
All the help we can get.
Sure.
That being said, though, we are doing well for the AFCON qualifiers. We're second in our group behind Uganda, who we've played twice already. Our last opponent in that group will be South Sudan, who have won none of their games so far. So,
well, they only won nationhood a couple of years ago. So,
yeah, that's fair.
Didn't exist as a country until just a few few months back.
There was also the Women's World Cup happening this past week/weekend. So South Africa beat Bangladesh, which sets us up to potentially be in a semi-final.
Women's World Cup semi-final. Wow. Hold me back. I'm so excited.
So we're relying
what on... What sport is this even?
Cricket.
Okay. Let's speed through this, James. I'll just look at my notes while you go through this information. It's
okay.
Completely uninteresting to me. Go on.
We are relying on England and the West Indies to make it into the semis. 2009 champions England have 2 wins so far with 2 games still to play. So they're the most likely to go through to the semis. That would leave us and the West Indies fighting for that last semi-final spot. England's next opponent is actually the West Indies. So that game of England versus the West Indies is quite a big one for South Africa. Okay, there. That's it. That's the Women's World Cup.
Okay, I'm back.
I'm finished.
All right. Yeah, okay, I'm back.
We're going to go back to the world of football. The Nations League is also happening.
What's that?
Lame international football. Yeah, it's not fun.
But like, who's in it?
All the European teams, all the big names are there, but it's just boring. It's international football. Nobody's really like invested in this thing, unless it's a World Cup.
All right.
The standout games from the past weekend, Poland, they played Portugal. Portugal beat them 3-1. Spain played Denmark. They won 1-0. And England won again.
Just going back to women's cricket.
Oh, no.
Carl says the irony of all those lesbians looking forward to a semi is not lost on me.
You know what's funny about that is... Ben sent me the sport. And in his sports report, he said, oh no, I should have found this just now. Hang on, I'm going to find it. He said, SA beat Bangladesh on track for a semi. He said those exactly.
There we go. All right, very good.
Finland, they played England. England won 3-1 there. Tonight, there's also football. France versus Belgium at 8:45, and Germany versus Netherlands also at 8:45. And then there was rugby this weekend. The Lions, they remain unbeaten. They played the Dragons this weekend. They won 23-19. The Bulls played this weekend also. They won 29-19 to the Ospreys. Interesting about that one, they stormed to like a 20-point lead at some point within 23 minutes. And then the game ended 29-19. So Ospreys nearly caught them. Bunch of yellow cards there for the Bulls. So that happened. Leinster, they played Munster. Leinster won 26-12. Edinburgh played the Stormers.
Leinster and Munster. They sound like two ugly Irish brothers. It's like,
yeah.
Here are my two brothers, Leinster and Munster. I brought them with to like fuck you up if you don't pay. You know,
break your kneecaps.
Yeah. Or I don't want to fight with anybody. But you know, if you're going to be difficult and you're not going to hand over the cash which we're owed, I'm going to have to hand you over to Munster and Leinster here behind me. And they're both going, what are you doing? Great.
The last two South African teams really took a beating this weekend. Stormers, they played Edinburgh. They lost 38-7. And then the Sharks, they played Benetton. They lost 38-10. So not good results there for the Sharks and the Stormers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the sport.
All right. Most people focused on the cloud that is seemingly behind James in the window. If that is a real cloud, that would be very good news indeed. We need that a little bit of rain. That Jesus, it's dry. It is dry as it is dry as Joan Rivers' vagina.
Yeah,
dry. That's how dry.
Basically,
ash. We need rain so badly. It's unbelievable. Okay, listen to this. I love this. Dirk says SpaceX catching that super heavy booster rocket yesterday with a chopstick crane was insane.
I have the video
on the first attempt, and Tesla showing off the updated Optimus bot, which can now interact with people. So busy week for Elon.
Yes.
Show us that video of that of the crane catching.
I've got a photograph and a video.
So do I, Leanne.
Oh, wow.
So let's see which one Flex chooses. James, get out of here.
See those chopsticks?
Oh, that is incredible. You see,
you know,
humans can still do cool things.
The first time I saw that, I hadn't had any context.
Yeah.
I just saw a video and I thought, that's someone playing around. That's a rocket launching and they've reversed the film.
Yeah.
Because there's no way something can come backwards and be caught by something.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, no. The arms release. And it fires up. Somebody is playing a joke. And straight away I Googled it. And that's when I realized.
It is awesome.
It's amazing.
I'm so happy that we're able to do something cool. Because, you know, really, like, so much of the stuff that we're proud of as humanity is just such dumb shit. It's like, oh, we got a new iOS 18. This is what I downloaded last night for my phone. The new operating system for Apple. And I'm like, oh, wait, it's not that different to iOS 17 or 16, 15, 14, 13, 12. It's kind of the same. And then you see this and you go, wow, they actually managed to get that rocket back and then catch it. Didn't land on Earth.
Arms.
Yeah, I mean, this is just spectacular. And I heard lots of feedback about the bots that they're building at Tesla. Very, very cool. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be excited about that too, by the way. I know lots of people worried about the robots coming to kill us.
Mm.
Calm down. It's not going to happen. Let's go to Dr. Hanan. Is he there? Ready? Oh, brilliant. Hey, Doc, how are you? I'm not worried about robots. Are you worried about robots?
Can't hear you. There we go. Guys, give me some sound here, please. Hello, Doc, can you hear us?
Hello?
Okay. Yeah, there we go. Hi. I mean, we need robots to take over from James and Flex, because I think they'd do a better job.
We as human beings, we've got more of a chance of self-imploding from the inside than the outside.
I'm telling you, you're right. Leanne and I were talking just about how people can't be honest about relationships. They just can't tell the truth about what they really want. You know, people just are incapable of even figuring themselves out, let alone figuring 100%. Out what robots are doing. I mean, that's why you're helping us. So I'm glad you could join us this morning, because we've got this little bit of feedback. I am a first-year med student at WITS, a career path that was chosen for me by my parents, says this person. At first, I was okay with it, but I'm really struggling with the idea of doing something I won't enjoy for the rest of my life. So there are two questions here, Doc. Number one, how do I confront my parents about dropping out? Two, how do I deal with this feeling of having disappointed them? Where do you want to start?
So I'd like to start with the kind of the first one, and ask this particular individual, how do you know you're not going to like it? Because there's also in the younger generation a misconception that you must enjoy absolutely and love absolutely everything that you do. You know, we live in a culture of immediate gratification. If I don't enjoy it, I'll just swipe up again. And if I don't enjoy that, I'll just swipe up again until I enjoy it. And one thing that the older generation can teach the younger generation is life experience and wisdom. And I want to tell you, there's no one person on planet Earth that does what they absolutely love 24/7. It just does not exist. There are good moments. There are bad moments. There are moments when you enjoy it. There are moments when you do it just because you have to pay the bills. There are moments when you're absolutely ecstatic about what you're about to learn. And there are moments when you actually couldn't care less. But overall, you must have a keen interest in what you do. You must feel that your temperament fits the role. In other words, you're capable of doing a good job. You must feel that it's financially is viable, and you must feel that it solves a problem. So to this individual, before jumping ship, I would ask her or him, how do you know you're not going to enjoy it for the rest of your life? What gives you that idea? Is it the fact that you're not enjoying this particular maybe curriculum? Are you not enjoying the semester? Is it a lecturer that you're not enjoying? The truth is that you're going to get into the workforce, and you might not like your colleague, or you might not like your boss, or you might not like that particular quarter. And it doesn't mean that you can just quit and leave and jump ship.
Oh, no. So I don't like my salary, said everyone who ever had a job ever.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. No.
What are you looking for?
Exactly. Exactly.
Right,
exactly.
So hang on, because I don't want to get this mixed up. This could be a future doctor. We don't want a bitter doctor who one day operates on one of us. Okay. So let's just get this absolutely right. Number one, determine precisely what the parameters are for happiness. Don't be unreasonable about this. Number two, you're saying don't just drop out. Think about what you would really like to do that isn't medicine, because you can't just leave plan A without a plan B. Am I right?
For sure.
Okay. So
here's the thing. So again, another thing that you have to take into account is, what is the alternative? So she says, how do I confront my parents? Hmm. Okay, well, you got to confront your parents with an alternative. You can't just be like, listen, I'm going to quit medicine and I'm going to wake up at 11 o'clock in the afternoon, play Xbox and hang around with my friends and figure it out. The alternative just doesn't work. Yeah. I'm okay with you going, well, listen, to your parents, I've thought about it. I've given them some real deep thought. The reason why this particular course or trajectory is not working for me is X, Y, and Z. I've come up with an alternative. I've done some research. This is what I want to study. This is how much it's going to cost. This is how much I'll sponsor. This is how much I expect you to support me with. And I've got an alternative, a plan B, that's better than plan A. Your parents, I'm assuming, want the best for you, but they wouldn't be prepared to support a no plan compared to a plan. So I would rather you do something that you don't like than do nothing at all, because then you're going to get depressed. So, but the first question that I want to highlight to this particular individual is figure out, as you say, Gareth, what are the parameters and whether I'm doing the right thing? So is it something that you have an interest in? Is it something that solves a problem? Is it something that fits with your temperament or skill set? And is it something that could potentially give you that financial security? If the answer is yes, well, then it's a no-brainer. If the answer is no, then you have absolutely all the right to leave, but consider plan B before you leave plan A. Do not do nothing instead. And if the answer is I'm not sure, before you quit, go and figure it out.
I mean,
go
also,
and ask the right question.
The other thing that we're not talking about here is that this person has to be pretty smart. I mean, you don't get into medicine if you are a bumbling idiot, right? I mean, medicine's for the really clever kids. It certainly was when I was at school, unless they've dropped those standards too, in which case, woe betide all of us, right? But there also is this thing, and I'm not going to attach this to the particular email that we've got here, but there is this thing about work being a punishment. There's this thing about like Gen Z and millennials in particular, not exclusively, but in particular, that work is some kind of a punishment for, you know, it's an ordeal. It's something that you have to suffer through.
Yeah, you have to endure from 8 until 5, like, Monday to Friday.
Yeah, if I just had lots of money, I wouldn't work. Well, what would you do? These people never seem to tell us what's over the rainbow. They want to sit at home and scroll mindlessly through social media all day? Like, is that what you'd rather do? Because I think I'd rather work than that.
It doesn't work. You know, on the one hand, perhaps people see work as an ordeal, as I have to do it. But on the other hand, which, by the way, doesn't work, it's an illusion. And on the other hand, they want to see work as a theme park. Like, I'm going into Disney World every day and just, you know, enjoying with full happiness and full joy every minute of every day, which doesn't exist either. Work, again, it needs to tick those four boxes, which I've mentioned earlier. And if it aligns with your keen interest, if it solves a particular problem, if it fits with your temperament, and if it offers you financial security, you're on the right track. And by the way, you can do many things at the same time. You can get your sense of purpose from your job, and you can get your sense of purpose from relationships. You can have a keen interest in your hobbies. So as a combination, you can really have a great, fulfilling, nutrient meal called life. Mm-hmm. So again, if you can tick those boxes, that's great. And I would really investigate before you jump ship, because getting into medicine is not easy. So if you're already in it, then make sure that once you quit for the right reasons. And if you are going to quit, give your parents a real alternative. And then once you give them a real alternative, then your guilt is unreasonable. You pursue the alternative and show yourself and show your parents why you've made the right call.
Right. I just think guilt in general is a stupid thing to carry. Unless you've done something truly horrible, I think guilt is just an absolute like waste of time. Especially if it's self-imposed, you know, if other people are saying to you, you've got to get over something, but you're holding on to that guilt like it's part of your identity, you've got to break free of that. Otherwise, you're just going to be a disaster.
As a matter of fact, the most devastating, destructive feeling that I see in my practice is the feeling of guilt. And guilt is a feeling that comes up when you believe that you've done something wrong, when you've broken your own rule set. So we all function within a framework. And the moment we break that framework, we step outside of the framework, our brain immediately initiates the alarm called guilt. You've done something wrong. You need to correct it. You need to go back to the old familiar way. Otherwise, you're going to be rejected. You're going to be dejected. You're not going to be a part of the group. And if you're feeling guilty and you have no reason to feel guilty, I would reassess your initial framework and your initial rule set that you had that you have broken. And if your initial rule set has been broken, but their initial rule set is unreasonable, I would continue pursuing that path until the guilt disappears.
Okay, and then MM says, Dr. Hanan is brave enough to come back after last Monday. Somebody says, please, no filthy talk with the doc today. Do you get any trouble after that discussion we had last week?
No, but it's been the my 10 and 12-year-old, that's part of their language now.
Oh, no.
No. What have you done, Gareth?
Kilometers of... Oh, wow. All right. Oh, my God. If they're interested in stand-up comedy, thoughts and prayers, telling that to parents. Okay, so you see some people are saying in here that it's a really difficult thing saying these things to your parents. I think you got to then reevaluate the kind of relationship you've got with them, too. I mean, if you're going to go and study medicine, I mean, let's just look at the alternative here for a second. I love being devil's advocate in this sort of situation. Let's imagine this person who's going to go and study medicine because their parents want them to. That's 7 years. Then they're probably going to specialize as well because their mom or dad will say, well, you know, it would be really good if you became like a, you know, a cardiothoracic surgeon. Mm. Then they'll go and do another, 5 or 6 years to specialize. And then they'll end up having to pay all of that back because even if their parents are super rich, they're only going to be a part of that. End up spending the first 5 to 10 years of practice paying that back. And then they'll be 40. They're doing this what? Because they don't want to disappoint their parents? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, 100%.
You shouldn't be doing things to satisfy anybody. You should be doing things because they fit with your identity and your long-term vision and goal for yourself.
But don't quit
just because you feel like it.
What kind of people?
How many times do we have to say on the show, feelings are irrelevant? Just because you don't feel like it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Feelings are irrelevant. Feelings are pathological lies.
We should create a graphic that whenever you come on, it just says, feelings are irrelevant.
Feelings are irrelevant.
Yeah, it's
unbelievable. Do you disagree?
No, these people fucking stupid? No, I agree with you.
Feelings are irrelevant. Just because you feel like it doesn't mean it's right.
I've got a suggestion, all right? Like, you're a very successful psychologist already, and I know you're working on some new technologies to be able to bring therapy to more people and to be able to help more people figure out what's going on in their own heads. Let's do Bushkin and Cliff. I'll be like your...
You can call it Bushy Cliff.
I'll be like your practical, the reality check person you bring in, and then you can make sense of it after. I shock them out of the stuck situation they're in. Huh?
Let's do it. I think that's great. That's therapy. No, completely. Completely. People need to know the truth with a touch of credibility.
That's very important, that touch of credibility. I have a feeling that was aimed at me, but okay, I like it. I'm keen. We call it Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. How about that? Even better. All right, I love it. Thanks, Doc.
Have a guy.
Nice. All right, have a good week, guys. Feelings are irrelevant. Do you see at the bottom of the screen? Perfect. That's the way it goes from now on. All right. We're going to take a break at 7 o'clock. Coming up in the next little bit, we're going to have Darren Scott making his triumphant reappearance for the first time on this show. And for the, I don't know, the 20th time in your life and about the 5th time in mine. I was going to bring in a bottle of Jack Daniels and some passion fruit, but I thought that's a terrible way to start a Monday.
Oh, goodness.
No, me. I was going to do it.
That was called a suitcase.
Yeah, and it was his drink.
Yes.
Like, he was the one who started me on that. Anyway, we'll get to some other stuff. Don't go anywhere. Lots of cool things still to come, including I've got a very, very, very disgusting thing to tell you. It came up in my social media over the weekend. Disgusting thing.
Ew.
Yeah, worse than most of the disgusting things we've had on before, and that's saying something.